Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Rhino Nation, broadcast to you live from the Phoenix Business Radio X studio in Tempe, Arizona, powered by Rhino Online Strategies and eCreativity. Rhino Nation is a growing community of incredible entrepreneurs and small business owners that share a common trait. They don't walk, they don't run, they charge to their destiny. From the mind-blowing talents of Generation Next to the treasure trove of seasoned business minds, we acknowledge and celebrate their business expertise, leadership, and fearless attitude to be victorious in their goals. Rhino Nation is committed to making powerful connections and providing enhanced exposure to broaden the reach and promote the extraordinary talents of our community members. I'm Michelle Faust, and with great pleasure, I introduce my guest today, Jason Lowen, president of Lowen Capital, and Tracy Bullock, president of Bullock Training and Development. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure. I always kind of throw this out as a bit of a monkey wrench for my guest, so be prepared. I like to give you the opportunity, first of all, to just give a little bio of yourself and what you do so that our listeners have a basic idea of what it is you do in your work and for the community. And I'll throw it to Jason first.
Hi, I'm Jason Lowen, and I'm president of Lowen Capital, a commercial real estate investment and development company. So really, we bring opportunities for individual accredited investors to actually directly participate in a project that they would otherwise never be able to be a part of. I've been out here in the Scottsdale, Phoenix area for about 16 years. And before that, I was a financial advisor at Merrill Lynch. And so that sort of led me into this world of real estate when I got to Phoenix. So now I just enjoy bringing these opportunities to, I won't say the masses per se, but really making them available to people where they just don't even think the opportunity is there for them.
That's fantastic. Good for you. Tracy?
Well, I am the president of Bullock Training and Development, which is a Sandler-licensed franchisee. Now, I spent 30 years in corporate America working for Procter & Gamble. Mm-hmm. Then I graduated, called that, got the golden handcuffs removed. And now I focus on personal development. I do personal development leadership in a bunch of different areas, all focused on communication. So sales, management, customer service leadership, and most recently, speaking. So helping people learn to talk to others the way they need to hear them versus the way we're used to speaking. And we do that through another entity called Depth, which is focused on developing and educating presenters to train for humanity. So really focused on their talks, their key messages, whether it be in work, whether it be big corporations, their own business, or their keynote speaking, really bringing that the love and lust of what they do into the worlds of others.
Fascinating, because I don't. That's a part of what you do that I'm
it's brand
not
new.
Aware of.
Just launched. Yeah. Just launched.
And,
September.
That's mm-hmm. going to be a great thing to talk about. We have a as usual. I have a bit of an agenda with my show. So to just kind of clue in. First of all, I met Tracy
at EU, I think, right?
It's been
Enterprise
a year,
University.
A year
yeah.
ago, mm-hmm. yeah, because you were part of the Enterprise Bank. They call it the EU Enterprise University, which is a great program because they bring free education, and it was a great class all about branding. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is a part of what I do as a marketing strategist. It was a class that I got a lot out of.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, I have continued to use it with all of my clients. Tracy, you also referred Jason over to me.
I did.
Which is a great shout out to people making referrals and helping others mm-hmm. to make those connections. Mm-hmm. And so I've been actually working with Jason as a marketing strategist. And we, as for anybody who looked at all the advertised social media ads that I put out there, Jacob Fan of Fantastic Media was supposed to be here as well. And he plays a very important piece in all of this too, because he and I are strategic partners, mm-hmm. and that he does a lot of back-end media. And so where that all kind of comes into play is in a number of different ways. Many people are branching out and being entrepreneurs and small business owners. I think we are seeing more coaches and business development leaders and trainers and all these things. And I feel like the business world is changing so much. And I'm, you know, my head is spinning most of the time trying to keep up with it all and how we approach marketing and all these kinds of things. So I'm going to just, as I guide this, and please, you know, jump in. You guys know each other. You know, I really want you to feel free to jump into the conversation. But I wanted to kind of start off with that whole idea of entrepreneurship and stepping outside of that comfort, which I know you did, Jason, by having worked with Merrill Lynch for so many years, mm-hmm. And then stepping out on your own. So without going into the 10-hour story about, sure. You know, that I'm sure there was a lot to it. But, you know, what motivated you to do that?
Well, as you mentioned, I work for the largest, you know, investment firm in the world. And sort of like what Tracy had mentioned before about just sort of being in the big corporate area, but as an entrepreneur, it becomes a little bit of a sort of risk reward where, okay, I'm going to go out on my own, you know, affords you the opportunity for tremendous rewards. However, there is the risk because now there's no fallback. There's no just office. There's no, you know, hey, I'm going to get the salary and I get 2 weeks vacation and health insurance and the 401k is sitting there. But I had that sort of sense within myself that there was more out there, more to do, mm-hmm. but I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew what I loved, which was real estate. Having come from that equities world, I knew I loved investments and numbers and growth and kind of wanting to build wealth. And I looked at just different ways to do it. And real estate really came, you know, to me, and I understood it and I kind of had a connection with it. But you know, I think even if you probably asked my parents as a kid, it was sort of Jason of, I have a brother and a sister, you know, Jason is probably the one that would go on his own or do his own thing or wasn't afraid to, you know, kind of step outside the box. And I think ultimately that sense of wanting to do my own thing, not wanting to really have a ceiling on what I was doing, which I think a lot of people might feel that sort of containment. Mm-hmm. When they're kind of doing the 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. And so that entrepreneurial side of me was just there. And I was just always looking for a way to let it out. And it sort of led me to then say, okay, if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. And so it's a sort of, you just had to go for it kind of a mentality.
Well, I'm a little bit aware of kind of that transition process, having had the wonderful opportunity to talk to your dad a mm-hmm. little bit about some of your transition. And I know that you got involved in flipping homes, mm-hmm. And that you were very, very, very hands-on to the construction mm-hmm. upgrade, et cetera. Is it safe to say that a little bit of where your love of real estate kind of became entrenched in, you know, what you're doing now and taught you, I presume, more knowledge of construction itself and when looking at commercial real estate, mm-hmm. understanding it?
No, absolutely. When I moved to Phoenix, I got into residential homes and flipping and so forth. And I kind of, being the entrepreneur, you start with bootstrapping. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of capital to do what you want to do. So you swing the hammer And which is what I did. You know, I, you know, came from a world that wasn't necessarily that type of work. And I just said, well, I don't want somebody to take advantage of me. I don't want somebody to tell me that a job is $5,000 and it's really $500. And so you begin to bootstrap as any entrepreneur starting out. You do the things that you need to do and work your way up from there. And, you know, over time, I begin to be able to just walk into a property, whether it's a house or a commercial building, and just see it. Because for so long, I had did drywall and laid the tile and plumbing and electric and things that, you know, I had to learn.
Right.
Really kind of on the fly. Even went to those, if you ever walked up to Home Depot and it says, learn to lay tile on next Sunday at 10 o'clock. I went to that. I literally went to that as a way to just, well, okay, how are you gonna do this? And you take you know, anything that's available to you to learn it. And so now I can really get a sense for having done so much of that. You know, when you walk in and see something, is, you know, I'm not as hands on in terms of swinging the hammer, but definitely learned a lot and know what to look for at this point.
Learning from the ground up. So
he never offered to fix plumbing at my house. I had a plumbing leak. He didn't offer to fix it.
Yeah, only on my own stuff. Yeah, if I'm going to mess it up, I want it to be my place, somebody else's.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see if we can kind of, you know, work that into a little bit of your experiences. And I know you worked, Tracy, with a lot of corporation businesses, larger businesses, you know, who are kind of beyond that Trump entrepreneurial stage. But in your experience, I'm sure you've seen all of the stages.
Well, and I went through all of the stages, right? Because
sure.
Leaving corporate America, I mean, Jason alluded to it, but after 30 years of it, although I changed jobs 15 times within P&G because, like most entrepreneurs, I wanted to continue to challenge myself. I wanted to continue to build my skill set. I'm a lifelong learner. And so, you know, you might call me chasing the purple squirrel around the room, right? Because all these things excite me and challenge me. But
you were an entrepreneur within the corporate
world. I was at that. But when I got a severance package and lifetime benefits, I felt comfortable enough leaving because I'd only been raised in a world where security was really important to me for myself and my family. And then got the kids launched and said, what's next? But Jason alluded to it, which is really you have to kind of try to do it all yourself, because what they forget to tell you is you don't have the guaranteed paycheck. You don't have all those resources behind you. I mean, I had resources that had managers that had assistants to help them with some of the stuff I do myself now or maybe don't get done now as well as I could. And so the challenge for me was really evaluating the four different options I had. One was going back to corporate. Mm-hmm. One was starting a business of my own, ground up, like Jason did. One was buying a business, a privately held business. But there's so much I didn't know about what I didn't know that I was intimidated by that. And then the other one was look at franchises. And the reason I chose the Sandler franchises, because it gave me the opportunity to bring all the things I love, the customization and making it mine, right? Really focused on the people I serve and the clients that come to me. And they're all sizes of clients, right? So my public class on Friday has every kind of industry you could possibly imagine sitting in the room. And we work on the same opportunities. You talked about it, getting out of your comfort zone, mm-hmm. learning new behaviors over time. And that makes all the difference, because none of us learn to do what we're doing today overnight. So learning new behaviors to get different results doesn't come overnight either. And that's really what attracted me to what I'm doing now. And then the public speaking where we met is a great way to be able to share kind of the anecdotes from bigger business that I learn and work in today and the smaller business that I've become. And kind of marry it to hopefully help others.
Where do you, this is a question I think that I get a lot, and it's an experience as an entrepreneur that I've experienced, is where you draw that line, where you make that decision to go from wearing all the hats to delegating or paying for the expertise that you don't have. I will say in the case of having Jacob come on board with me is that I was trying to learn all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, buying the courses to learn the back end social media, et cetera, and then realizing that he could do in half 5 minutes mm-hmm. what would take me 2.5 hours, and where you have to start valuing your time.
Right.
Is there kind of a rule of thumb on that, or more instinctive?
You know, I don't know if it's a rule of thumb necessarily. I probably tried to wear all the hats for too long. I'll admit that I probably held myself back by not recognizing earlier when it was time to let go.
Right.
In what I do, and more now on the sort of commercial investment side, you know, you've got realtors, brokers, real estate agents, they're part of acquisition and sales. You get lenders, and they have that. There's property managers. When I was doing single family houses, I would find them, finance them, get the loan, swing the hammer and do the work we talked about, go find renters and put them in there. So you're doing 8 things, and each one of those is its own industry. It's people's full-time job, and I'm trying to do 8 full-time jobs. Like you know, maybe bringing Jacob on board, you say, well, that's its own industry that I'm trying to learn. I can't learn them all. And so I think it's the ability to recognize, and it can be a little bit scary because then you've got to pay somebody for it and you got to dip into that cash flow and so forth. But I think it's a personal threshold that you hit. And I think for me, it was, I realized that I was stopping myself from growing. You can literally weight yourself down. And I begin to learn that it was the minutia, and where I need to be thinking as a business owner is forward and ahead and the next step and business development. And I was focusing on sort of back office and support and all the little things that went into it, and not surrounding myself with the best people that I could find and rely on them to do their jobs and bring them in and use their expertise and say, you don't have to be an expert at everything. You know, when I was 40, I went back and got my MBA because I wanted more business. I wanted to be the expert in you know, all this in these areas and so forth. So that was a really good move for me, but it taught me a little bit more. You know, it's something where I stay in touch and communicate with Tracy on, is the management side of things, of your time, of other people, the accountability aspect of it. But as far as when to let go and bring in other people, I think you just know it for yourself when you look in the mirror and say, wow, I'm the one that's stopping this from growing because I'm so busy trying to do everything, instead of just surrounding yourself with the best people that you can find, you know, or for a lot of people, the best that you can afford.
Exactly.
At the time.
Do you find yourself, Tracy, having to cover that with a lot of your customers?
Even myself.
Counsel them?
Yeah. So I call it the tipping point. It's a great book, yeah. Right? But from a strategy perspective, if people look at where they are and where they want to be, some people call that a pain points, but instead I call it the gap between your current state and your future state. And you have to decide, what do you need in order to close that gap? And then what skills need to happen to fill those needs? And there's never a time that you don't have to buy forward, ever. Yet when you want to scale up, there's a time when you have to literally say, either I have to hire ahead or I have to get resources ahead. Because if you're working on what's happening today, you're already working, as Jason said, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Because that doesn't allow you to do that. Another big piece of a lot of stuff Jason and I have talked about together over time has been playing to our strengths. And my strength has nothing to do with administrative pieces. It has nothing to do with detail orientation. It has a lot to do with strategy and maximizing and So strategic, maximizing, learner, all those things are things that I do really well. And anybody would tell you, go do the things you do well and hire the rest. But money is the scary part. So having to figure out how you bootstrap it, or if I invested this, how long would it take me to get that out of it, right? It's those deliberate choices.
What are you saying to begin 30 years with it with Procter & Gamble? Mm-hmm. What have you been seeing in terms of changes in marketing? Because there's been a lot.
Well, it used to be that you could advertise on the 2, then it was 3, then it was 4 major stations, and you'd reach the majority of folks. And they used to, on TV, and they used to measure Nielsen ratings, and that was a big deal on what people would buy, what they would stock in stores. From a business-to-consumer standpoint, from a business-to-business standpoint, it became enabling the ability for people to buy easier and quicker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sexier and all that stuff. Well, the proliferation of where we get information today, it makes it almost impossible for a one-size-fits-all. And if people aren't very clear on what their market is and who resides in that market, it's impossible to come up with a strategy. As you know, I mean, this is your specialty, a strategy for talking to them the way they need to hear you. So if I were to go out and try to talk to a 40 plus year old and wanted Instagram to be the vehicle of choice, I would be crazy.
Right.
Because that's just not how to do it. But if I want to attract newer people into my classes, my sales classes, my management classes, where they get very little support, because we always promote those people who are great at what they do and they're awful at managing others. But if I want that crowd, I have to not only speak to them in that sense, but they also have to get a sense of who I am. Because it's not just what they need, it's who they get it from. And I think that's the biggest challenge in marketing today in order to translate it into business growth.
So that leads me a little bit into branding too, which is what brought me to you in the first place. Mm-hmm. Just the idea that it's much more of a market of people buying from those they like and trust, mm-hmm. those who they know who the individual is behind the service, the product, whatever it might be. Now, of course, that's not possible with a Coca-Cola necessarily, nope. because, you know, the brand is their product. But we have such a huge community of small businesses that really need to put a focus on branding who they are, mm-hmm. so that that where people are putting their trust in. Mm-hmm. I trust you to buy your service. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's a big change.
I think that's what makes Jason very successful at what he does is he works with people who either know him personally, mm-hmm. or know people who know him personally that rely on it. And by building the, let's call it personal equity, right? Mm-hmm. Behind your brand and delivering on time what you say you're going to deliver, mm-hmm. and keeping people informed and progress along the way, which is why I love what you guys are starting to do together, because it's not just informational and informative, it's educational. And oh, by the way, here's what's going on.
Right.
I just think there's nothing that replaces it, and so few people are good at it. And that's what differentiates.
I think that's the biggest part that I've learned. You know, in business, it is the relationships, you know, and it is that trust that in doing what you say you're going to do, following up when you say you're going to follow up. Nothing, in my opinion, builds credibility faster than doing what you say that you'll do. I mean, it still drives me crazy to this day if I reach out or try to do something and then, you know, even some that I'm working with and it's days to hear back or weeks. And probably everybody knows that and senses that frustration when, you know, you're trying to get things done. Why are you not? It's not hard. I'm not asking for, you know, your firstborn here. I just need a simple, you know, one sentence answer will do. And I think I can attest that just from personal experiences, I instantly kind of go, am I working with the right people? Are they as motivated and excited about their business as I am about mine? Are they investing as much in themselves and their companies or businesses or their practice or services as I am? And that's what I was kind of referring to about surrounding yourself with sort of the you know, those best people. But I think even in the age of, you know, social media and the internet and selling things online and whatnot, I mean, I think that product aspect goes only so far.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to connect with what's kind of behind just the product, which is a little bit, you know, Tracy was saying about the television and whatnot. I mean, she couldn't do what she does if there's not an instantaneous sort of connection, earned respect and trust coming out the gate. Or, you know, they say, well, why would I bring you in to train all my people if she doesn't immediately garner that respect in the first, you know, couple of minutes?
Right. All right.
So if 85 or 90%, it's close, it might even be over 90 now. I haven't looked at stats for 18 yet because they really haven't come out. I've looked at mid 17 stats. 85%+ of all shopping is done, any kind, product, service, or ideas, is done online. So if we get an opportunity to get in front of people or to connect with them like we're doing today in a conversational mm-hmm. versus a presentational mm-hmm. thing, that they've already made their mind up 85% of what kind of they're looking for. So the last 15% is all about the personal touch.
Well, and that leads me a little bit to networking and a conversation I had just the other day about networking, which I believe in. It has always been a big part of business, but the way I see social media, if it's done right, is that it can be a more efficient way of networking. Because when you are able to reach that target market to get your message, a powerful message out there to the people who need to hear it, when you're branding yourself and pushing that out then on social media, that is networking, but in a very, very efficient means of getting to the right people. Mm-hmm. So it's still networking. It's just a different way. It's just moving along with, you know, as the world continues to advance. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely. So funny story. I was on a date and I went to, go to a restaurant and the restaurant was closed. So it was first date and the guy says, well, we can go, my buddy's having a big dinner party. And I mean, I don't know if you'd be comfortable going to a group of people you don't know. And of course, that's like asking me if I could talk to the wall, which I can, right? So we ended up going to this party and it was so much fun. We ended up playing board games and doing all this stuff. And at the end of the evening, not even the end of the evening, about 2 or 3 hours in, taking a break from playing this game. And I go visit with people and people say, I am so glad to meet you. And I said, well, thank you. They said, no, you don't understand. I've been getting all your social media stuff and I can now put a name and a face together and don't ever take me off your list. And you just don't know who you're going to touch or how that's going to play out. And it gets back to where you're going with this is the connection between networking and social media and networking to the right audience, but then carrying that through, making sure it's your personality. So it didn't sound like somebody else right. wrote my stuff. It was my voice. You do a good job with Jason in capturing his voice and his stuff.
And that true validation that
yeah.
you got there.
I'm like, wow. Didn't end up dating the guy for very long, but it was sure nice.
Because I was going to say, was there a next date?
There was. It's, yeah.
That's great. Thanks. I have a former financial background to a certain extent. Again, I grew up with stockbrokers all around me. And so I decided for a short period of time that I thought that was the route I wanted to take. And it really wasn't. I was just, yeah, it wasn't my love. But it still is something that is very near and dear to my heart. So one of the things that attracted me to you as a client and as a person is, as I've gotten to know the business that you do mm-hmm. and how it differentiates from the many different ways of investing, mm-hmm. because there are a million ways you can invest. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a million, but there's
probably
many ways you can invest. So tell me in your words of how you differentiate investing with you and with Loan Capital versus going to a stockbroker or just investing in mutual funds or, you know.
Sure.
Whomever.
Sure. And I used to be in that world and now being on the real estate side, I don't invest in the equities side of the business like we did before. One of the main differences is in the projects that I do, I invest my own money into the projects. Now, I don't know if you grew up, in that background, had that family. I don't know how often they put money in the mutual fund with you.
Nope.
And you just never know what's going on behind the scenes. And I learned that, when I was with that large investment firm, is it's really hard to look under the hood. It's hard to see what's going on. There's Wall Street and so forth. And so for me, a lot of the investing is, part of it is having the control to really make the decisions, go in, look at a property, put my hands on it, put my eyes on it, and look under the hood and kick those tires. I make money when the project makes money. And so I think in regards to, versus a financial advisor or, a lot of times they'll have what people know from commercial real estate is what's called a REIT, real estate investment trust. That's just more of a large pool of the assets that you can just get in. But again, it's more through a publicly traded markets. But you really don't know what's in there. You haven't seen it. You haven't been, a part of it. Crowdfunding has come out now. There's different platforms and people are really excited about that. It's a way for the sort of smaller accredited investor to get involved. A lot of people might have that one wealthy friend that has an apartment building or a little strip center that they got involved in or bought years ago. Everybody goes, how in the world did you get involved in, an apartment project? And they knew somebody like me and it got them involved in that. You grow, through the people you know and those types of relationships. When you look at the, going through a financial advisor or through like a crowdfunding, I fly to my projects if they're not right here in town. And I mean, we were just at a project this morning, walking around, taking a look. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And neither will anybody investing in them. And they don't get to see the numbers and they don't get to, lift the hood up behind the car. And, you mentioned talking to my father. So many of my clients are friends and family. And that's where you start. That's really where any entrepreneur is going to start in a lot of ways is whether starting a business and raising capital or your first few clients or whatever is going to be those friends and those family relationships that you capitalize on, at which point you have to have already built. That rapport and respect.
If you want to still have them as friends and family, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of
people.
A lot of people, the last people they want to talk to are their friends and family. But that's where I started. And that's sort of with your help. And we talked about growing the networks and social media, something that I've never done before. But you can only network so much. You can only go to so many little networking events. You can only do so much yourself. And then you say, okay, I need to open the doors. Again, I'm not going to learn the ins and outs of social media and networking and development, but that's why I've got you and I've got Jacob and I've got Tracy, because you're all people who understand how to reach out to the broader audience. And then once I've got them, maintaining them. So a little off of what you're asking about of how I differentiate, but, it kind of circles all, back around to it. But really, I think for me, the difference is my personal hands-on involvement, my putting my dollars into a project alongside of those friends, family, and people that get involved are really the main differentiators. And the fact that, if the market goes down, your advisor still gets paid. If a project doesn't go perfectly, I don't.
Right. So you're going to pick and choose
Yeah,
very carefully.
Absolutely. There's not necessarily a million opportunities, so I have to, you know, pick and choose the very best ones with the, you know, best sort of risk adjusted returns and the project we looked at and the people that we work with. It's, you find a great project, but as you both know, you know, you can have the greatest business idea in the world out there as an entrepreneur, but if you can't execute, or the people around you can't execute, or you invest in a company, you invest in a startup, you invest in real estate, whatever it is. The biggest question I have is, do I believe that this group or these people can execute and perform?
Right.
Because without the execution, I mean, there's been a million wonderful, amazing ideas that probably could have been, you know, a $1 billion company, and they couldn't fulfill or execute on the game plan or the idea or grow it or got greedy or sidetracked or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are a million reasons things fail.
So if, as an investor, just from a percentage standpoint, is this an opportunity to be able to come in and make the same return that large scale investor, the guy who has $1 million, $5 million, $20 million to go in and buy an apartment building and these types of things, mm-hmm. You know, they can at least see that similar type of an ROI on their smaller chunk of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we essentially, you know, if we put $1 million into a project, we'll instead say, well, let's do 10 people to get to that number. And everything is sort of what we call on a pro rata basis. So those percentages of returns go to everyone. When I invest directly in a project, I don't have all the fees. We discussed REITs and mutual funds before, and there's a lot more return going on the back end. But after the fees get levied and profits get taken first by some, and it kind of hammers down those returns. That's why we invest directly and not through other entities, because you kind of take out all those middle fees and costs and big buildings and staffs of 30, and, you know, it's somebody's got to pay for all that, and it's usually the investor ends up paying for all that.
So thank you for that. I mean, that gives me, and I think our listeners, a much clearer idea of what you're doing and doing well. And Tracy, I just, you know, how do you differentiate with what you do? I mean, I personally have experienced, so I know your ability to train and to teach, and you were incredible. But what would you say to differentiate your company, your business, over other similar businesses?
I would say there are probably three things, and Jason hit on two of them. The first is you got to be willing to do what you teach. You got to be willing to do what your company does, and you have to have that same passion for it. There are many, many training businesses. And people who call themselves coaches, and we can talk a little bit about what Tracy Bullock defines the difference between coach and consultant and trainer is, but there's a lot of people who call themselves coaches or other educating companies who do, for instance, sales training. But typically they have two arms, one arm that goes in and sells the deal and the other arm who comes in and trains the people. And I would say the number one thing that differentiates myself from the people who don't have single sourcing, if you will, is I do the same thing all my clients do. I'm responsible for prospecting my companies, my individuals, people from different industries across the state, the country, the world, whatever. Secondly, I also have to sell just like they do. And again, you focus on your differentiators, identifying instead of what you do, identifying why they might need what you do. So you can qualify and disqualify each other faster. And then if I'm really, really lucky, I get to train them. And that's my love. So prospecting was probably the hardest thing for me. Well, number one thing for me to learn was what a big business is and a small business, because working for P&G is big. And working in Arizona, 82% of the businesses are small to medium-sized businesses. So I really had to re-educate myself. But and selling in a different way. I had to learn to sell to people the way differently than I would at a Fortune 50 company, and different than I learned over time, because people buy differently now. But the second thing Jason talked about was execution. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly call myself the executioner.
But in the positive way.
In a positive way. Well, a lot of people are strategists, and certainly I can help with strategy, but there's so many people who are fabulous business and financial strategists. And I frequently send clients my friends and referrals and prospects to those folks to come up with a plan. But once you have that plan, you have to learn how to execute it. And that's what I love. And I think that's what I'm best at, is helping people identify not just the what, and hopefully they know their why, but the how.
Yeah.
And I guess the third thing would really be customization. I don't, and nor do I have to, with the Sandler material, have to say, okay, week one, day one, we do this. You know, week two, we do this. It's literally about taking the psychology of communication that the platform's built on and making it right for the audience, making it right for the people I talk to. And I'm so blessed to have the experiences I've had behind me, and I'm agile enough to to adjust it. But but I think it's the not just eat what you kill mentality, but really understanding that you're doing the same thing you're asking your clients to do. Secondly, the execution piece and focusing on how you do it and how you do it well. But thirdly, the customization to talk to the individual or the business, not as you talk to everybody else, but as the person or the company that's sitting across the desk from you.
So do you have an ideal client or an ideal size of a business, or are you able to customize to just about...
I can customize to just about anybody. Okay. And the other wonderful thing is, and this is a very formal statement that everybody on air will know, I never work with poopy heads. So
that's a technical term.
That is a technical term.
It's an industry insider. Yeah,
industry standard technical term, poopy head. So once you say that I'm only going to work with people that are kind to others and have the same kind of values that I have, and Jason mentioned those too, which is probably why we're such good friends and work associates, is you got to surround yourself with people you trust, with people who work like you, who have the mm-hmm. same passion for mm-hmm. success, et cetera, because I can't want it more than they do.
Right.
I've worked with individuals. I help mentoring programs. I help, you know, college students, all of that. So that solopreneur all the way up to the salesperson who's paying his own tuition to improve what they're doing.
Yeah, but you also had a client take you to Prague recently.
I do. Yeah. So I'm really lucky that I get to use, yeah, and I went to Vienna after the Prague thing too. No, Vienna, then Prague. You're right. And we're going to go to Thailand again and Vietnam. So that's the flow. But so now that I know how to speak in a new language, in a more current language where people do a lot of research on the internet, now I get to sprinkle in my enterprise knowledge and go back and do that. So yes, I get to work with wonderful clients like On Semiconductor. I work with their global procurement organization, their leadership team. I work with Tyson Foods. So I was recently in Springdale or Fayetteville, however you want to, you know, that whole area, helping their team that specializes in the pet division. Okay. How do they go to market across channels? Because there are different types of businesses and different ways you need to speak. And they can't keep being competitive in a way that their competition is. They have to change up their language. And then MassMutual is another wonderful client that needs to learn to talk B2C, not B2B. And so, yeah, it's really fun to strengthen my muscle a little bit. Yeah.
I feel like this conversation could have gone on 4 hours, but I do have to keep an eye on time. And there's two important questions that I wanted to address with each of you. So I want to make sure we get to both of them. To Jason, Have you ever had to walk away from a project, and why?
I think anybody who's a business owner absolutely has to, you know when to walk away or know when to run, like Kenny said. yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Usually there's, you know, like I mentioned before, a major criteria is can you execute when we find a project that we really love? And I've had, we do projects in different markets, not just in the Phoenix market, as a way to diversify, because I was in Phoenix heavily in single family residential in 2005, 6, 7, 8. So I know what not doing one thing in one place means and the risk that that carries. And so we have to love the project and love the people. And the ones that I walk away from are where I don't have those two key aspects, where I've loved the people. And then as we spent about a month on our due diligence and looking into it and jumped on a plane and went out there and looked. And once we really got my hands on what you described before of that knowledge of walking in, I could tell that the what was going to be required to make this project what we thought it could be was underestimated until I got my eyes on it. And that's why when I talk about kind of being boots on the ground and looking under the hood and hands on, if I was just investing in a REIT or through a crowdfunding platform, I would never have known that the budgets were maybe off or some of the comps in the area were off. So project where we love the people, didn't love the actual asset at the time. And I've had it go the other way where we absolutely loved the asset, great opportunity, had tenants in there, beautiful building in a major city, class A property.
Poopy heads.
And struggled with the industry term there. Yeah. But struggled with some of the people and said to ourselves, is this a relationship that I want to have for the next, you know, 2, 3, up to, you know, 5 years. Some of the actions, comments, lack of the follow through that we kind of talked about doing what you say you're going to do and that credibility. And when that started to wane, I sort of immediately began to get a little bit nervous and thought, well, this is a little early in the process. We aren't even in a partnership, but I'm getting a little bit uncomfortable with some of the things that I'm seeing here. And we had people very interested in the project, and I had to call each one of them and say, you know, we're going to walk away.
That can't be an easy thing to do when you've built up, you know, expectations.
No, absolutely. Yeah. They were excited about it. I was very excited about it, but there will always be another opportunity. And the pain of a loss in any investment or any other, you know, thing that you put your time, energy, and money into, the pain of the loss is always bigger than the joy of the success. You know, everybody likes sitting there and watching that stock go up 10% and they're really excited. But when it goes down 10, that part hurts more than the joy of the upside. And so everybody understood where I just said, you know, we're not having the right feeling. Yeah. I said, I would rather walk away and be wrong and miss a good opportunity than to not walk away and have been right and it imploded.
And yeah, feeling that pain right now, that 10% loss. Nothing to mark.
Get in line, girlfriend. Right.
There's a lot of that going on right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can appreciate that. Well, good for you for, you know, being able to stand up to principles on that. Because I've met people who wouldn't necessarily do that. They'd run with it just because it sounds like a good idea. So let's just go no matter.
Well, and that's where the concept of my upside is only on the success of it. So right. If it goes bad, there's no compensation or fees. And sometimes people go, well, it may not work, but we'll go ahead and sell this to somebody anyway. But if I get a hint that it's not going to go, then we're not going to go.
Exactly. Yeah, good point. So my question, I wanted to circle back to what you said in the beginning about kind of your new offerings of helping people to really speak to that humanitarian side mm-hmm. of thing. Yeah. Can you address that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So I do a lot of speaking, which is where we met. And almost 20% of my revenue every year comes from speaking to people. And as you know, it's always focused on individual development mm-hmm. and growth. And a big part of what I do personally is charity work or involved in different pieces of giving of my time, not just my money. And I am lucky enough to surround myself with other people who do that. So I recently was introduced this year to somebody who actually has had experience as an agent for speakers. And I thought, well, what a wonderful way to combine the communications training, the speaking stuff, and ask somebody to help me to, mm-hmm. to you know, circle back around to use your resources, find more opportunities to bring development ideas, et cetera, to somebody. And my girlfriend, Lori Erickson, who owns Project Pros, she and another really dear friend of mine, Brian Wagner, whom you've met, put together a company, and Ryan Parker, who has a videography company, put together a company called Depth. And it's really focused on, hey, pick your audience. If the folks who want to work with us to get trained on how we not just represent ourselves, but represent others, bring that back to conscious capitalism, bring it back to a topic that helps not just get you paid, but helps the people that you work with further their message or something within their company that they're trying to improve on, then that's really the humanities piece that we're talking about.
And I think if I get around talking to people of all generations, but particularly the generation coming up, I really see a switch, a turning around of trying to get away from it's all about me to what does this do for others? What does it do for the environment, the earth?
That's why sustainability is such a big message. But it's not just sustainability in the earth and our resources. It's also sustainability in how you're going to help at home mm-hmm. and how you're going to help somewhere else. But you're exactly right. This upcoming generation is probably the most, the generation before, so the millennials, are probably the most well-educated folks. And when people say, oh, they're all about themselves, no, they aren't. We taught them that they could be whatever they wanted to be, and they should search for that and reach for that. But what we're all guilty of is then turning around saying, how dare you go ask for, you could be whatever you wanted to be. But the generation behind them, the one that's coming up right now, is so focused on what can I do to make the place that I am in, my present place, a better place to be.
Right.
And I don't want to work in a place surrounded by that industry standard of poopy heads or people who only are after chasing the dollar.
I think that's great. I mean, that's why I'm so excited to be focusing a lot of my business now more on the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I love the ideas, the energy, and everything that's behind them. So with 5 minutes left, mm-hmm. we're going to start to wind down, and this is where I just want to make sure that each of you have an opportunity. If there's something that you didn't get to share and you want to share, please do. But then also, if you'd like to share contact information of how people can get a hold of you, then this is the time to do it as well. So I'll flip back over to you, Jason.
Well, I think the people that follow you will see some of my links and whatnot through your, you know, LinkedIn and social media and whatnot, which is why I have you on board, because it's not my strength at this point. They can check out the projects that we're doing and the processes that we use. We sort of bring that big institutional sort of mentality to the individual, bring it down to people who, you know, want to be involved, but say, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I don't understand it. I'm a little bit confused. You know, how does this work? So they can go to my website, Lowen Capital, and that's LOEWENCapital.com. And through there, we can reach out and set up a time to have a phone call or sit down one-to-one, shoot me an email, ask questions, and just kind of connect with me. And, you know, even if it's not about one of my projects or something that's going on, I'm happy to, you know, answer questions and help people in any way that I can to sort of understand this larger, you know, sort of world that's, you know, for so long has kind of been outside the reach of the individual, you know, accredited investor. So again, they could just go to the site, lowencapital.com, and let's connect and we'll set up a time to chat or to get together, and, you know, happy to answer any questions in any way that I can, or any way that I can help, or try to help to alleviate some of the mystery or confusion behind an individual being able to get involved in real estate and have some ownership of a large, you know, commercial project, and really bring those opportunities to more people.
Perfect. That's great. Absolutely.
Well, it's a perfect time of year, right, to suggest that if people are struggling to figure out how they've now set their goals for 2019, if they have goals, we won't go there. But if they do, and they're wondering, what skills do they need? Or I've set the goal, I don't know how to get there, right? They're struggling with, I can't do the same thing over and over again and expect to get better results. Or their management teams, they know they have the right people, but they just don't have the skills yet. Or maybe they're not working well together. Mm-hmm. Typically, the things I hear in that instance, sales instances, we're in front of the right people, but can't close them. We can't get in front of the right people. So therefore, we're presenting things instead of having a conversation to the wrong people. And half the time, it's whoever it is when I first see the door, because then I get to say, check the box. I went and presented to somebody. From a management perspective, it's my people can't hold their folks accountable. They don't understand them. We have too much turn because 90% of people leave their manager, not their company. From a communication perspective, a lot of calls I get are, hey, could you help me? I work in X business and I want to be seen as a leader or a thought leader, a subject matter expert. And I know I need to be better at getting those communication processes across. Or somebody who says, my goal in life is to be a keynote speaker. I want to speak in front of audiences and make them laugh and make them cry and share something that means something to me, to others. Those would be the reasons why people would contact me. My contact information, you can find me on LinkedIn, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on my website, but it's Tracy Bullock, so no E in Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, dot Bullock, like Sandra, but not the same family, at Sandler, S-A-N-D-L-E-R.com. And my website is tbullock.sandler.com.
That's great. That's fantastic. I want to thank both of you for contributing to a great conversation with. I would love to continue, but unfortunately, we're having to wrap up at this point. So again, my most appreciation to both of you.
Thank you.
And,
thank you very much for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
It is fun, isn't
it? It's a microphone.
It's a microphone. There is something about a microphone
know,
in front of
you. I love it. He doesn't really love it, but I love it.
Well,
I'm working on it.
Yeah. Well, you play your cards right. I'll get you back here. So in close, this show is Rhino Nation is sponsored by Rhino Online Strategies and Creativity. And what we do is free up your precious and limited time as a business owner to do what you do best, running and growing your business. We partner with you to identify your content and your marketing needs and provide you with fresh, innovative, dynamic copy that will effectively connect to your market. Our marketing strategy includes expertise in targeting and reach through social media channels by posting content to targeted specific audiences using geo-targeting, pixelated coding to capture email addresses that build your email list, and analytics to optimize social ads and posts, and all which lead to increased customer engagement, a higher conversion rate, and increased sales, which is what we're all looking for, right?
Yep.
We help empower you to have control of your business and future by amplifying your method and delivering it to the right market. Thank you for listening. This has been Michelle Faust.